Today is Monday morning, the 15th of February, 2016. And we live here, as you all know, with pressures that don't exist in most areas where this recording is being heard. So I just want to mention, unfortunately, we have to break the shear at about an hour from now. There's going to be a siren. I was just given informed and given my orders. And we have to go down to the miklat. So today will be a brief shear. But ein hayat shaletet b'zeh. I want to welcome all the students, those that are here, those that are listening, those that will come in. And particularly, it's a schut for me. I have two grandsons sitting in front of me. I benefit from the break in the university world. For those listening, when we speak of university students, they're a lot older than when you went to university. Here we have before university what's known as Hesder, what's known as Tzva Hagana Yisrael. And without the boys serving in the army, we wouldn't be able to sit here in peace and teach. Now, we're in the middle of the history of Torah in the United States, and we've spent the last year plus already on the Lubavitcher Rebbe, and as I've explained many times, I could have done the Rebbe in one day and said, that's it. But due to the fact that anyone under the age of 60 grunts and laughs in the Litvishev world and the greater Wayudor, when you mention Lubavitch, they think of Messianists, and they don't realize who the Rebbe was and his impact, which goes on and on. So I decided to do the best I can to explain the Rebbe as an outsider looking in, but as an outsider who had a direct periscope into 7070, as I've explained so many times. Now, last week we were dealing with Jerome Mintz's second book, Hasidic People, A Place in the New World. And we as I explained many times, a social scientist, one of the basic material he has to deal with, not like a scientist. It's not like a scientist who's dealing with absolute facts and has to reach absolute truth. It's not like a Rebbe giving a shiur in the Shas and Paiskim who ultimately wants to be intellectually honest, if I can use a quote from my Rebbe, Zechet Mori Rebbe Rav Soloveitchik. And you want to try to reach what you consider the truth. When it comes to social science, it's not the truth you want. It's what the way people act, the way people think. And the chapter I quoted to you last week, beginning on page 92, Jerome Mintz had a fascinating chapter entitled Lubavitch, Redeeming Fellow Jews. And it dealt with outreach and the tefillin campaigns and putting on the tefillin and being makarev people. And we analyzed it in detail. The Rav was asked about it in that interview I quoted so many times from the mid-70s in Maariv. How do you feel? And what's involved? Now, one of the things we said last week, and this was interviewing someone. Again, I want to make clear, it's not my comment and it's not Jerome Mintz's comment, but interviewing people. So one of the people that Chabad grabbed and asked to put on tefillin made the comment that he felt awkward that there was no follow-up. He put on tefillin, he walked into the mitzvah tank or the mitzvah mobile, and he walked out again. And no one took his name, no one took his address, no one took his phone number. And this was a fascinating comment that we made in passing last week in class, quoting him, being interviewed by Jerome Mintz. And this comment played all over the world. A young man who's not more than a teenager named Aharon Altman, who's a very astute young man, and I predict a wonderful future for him. I hope he'll be a gadol b'Torah and Yirat Shemayim. He made a point that's worth thinking about. I would also like to suggest that even when numbers aren't exchanged, this might actually help people to feel more comfortable when asked to put on tefillin. I would like to humbly suggest that when people go into the mitzvah mobile and they are asked to put on tefillin without having to give out their number and without thinking that they are now entering into a long-term thing, they do it more easily as they feel like it just a once-off occurrence. And they aren't obligated. or pressured by the stranger who just gave their number, who they would have just given their number to come back. So I believe that this is a very insightful statement, and I've thought about it. I had other correspondents on the topic from people much older and much more experienced, world-class rabbanim on this very topic, not just from this young, wonderful man. And, you know, I thought of something. How would you handle it? Again, I'm not involved in this. It's not in my ballpark, and I'm not going to stand on street corners, and I have a different attitude altogether, but the history has proven Chabad more correct than the world I come from. But how would you handle it? And you know what I thought of? That when you have I call it a mitzvah tank, but I see the real term today is mitzvah mobile. If anyone wants to correct me, please do so. But in my days, I think it was called the mitzvah tank. Although I have to be honest, I don't recall seeing this in America. When I went in Aliyah, 69, I don't recall that they had these mitzvah tanks. I think the first time I saw it was when I was visiting America, maybe in the late 70s, and suddenly Chabad had some day of, it could be it was one of the Fabrengen days in the summer, and there were mitzvah tanks in Manhattan, I recall. Remember, the New York Times wrote it up. You know what I would do? You invite someone in to put on tefillin, don't ask for anything. Simply leave a book. And like a condolence, lahavdil, you see at weddings or at lower lenu shivas, they leave a book that you can write blessings in, particularly at the condolences, because generally at weddings, if you give a gift, you give a letter with the gift, so you're writing a bracha there. But with condolences, you see the book and you're free. If you want to write, you write. Or like you go to a museum. We visited, when I was in Tel Aviv that weekend, to see the outreach going in my student shul. So on Friday, we went to some museums in Tel Aviv. I think it was Thursday. And there was a book, "What Are Your Comments?" I would leave it. And if he wishes, he can comment. If he doesn't want to comment, fine. If he wants to leave his phone number. But again, there's no two ways about it, that when you present a person with tefillin, he has to think about it, and when a Jew starts thinking, we're doing okay. All right, so that's what we spoke about last week. In addition, we spoke about the Rebbe's attitude, always to be positive. Even if you don't see results at this moment, you never know what's going to happen a long, long time from now. And there's a lot of truth to that point of view. It works. We also spoke in a previous class about what Lubavitch means and what it means being a shaluach. And we're going to come back to this again, perhaps even, I don't know if we're going to reach it today, but being a shaluach means a lifetime commitment. It's very, very different than the shlichut from Israel, and as I've said more than once, and this plays a role on the contemporary scene, as we will see. A shaliach from Israel, yes, they send the Torah Culture Department of the Jewish Agency used to send shlichim. Today it's under the Jewish Agency. They have a whole division. Then the Mizrahi movement sends shlichim. So you send shlichim 3 years, 4 years maximum. Again, someone like myself, and I imagine I'm only one of tens of thousands of people who think have been offered shlichut over the years, and I would never accept it because I was never willing to leave Israel for a substantial period of time. My standard answer always was that I can leave Israel for 2 weeks, a month, I can give lectures, but if I stay in America more than 1 month, I forget all my Torah and just recall my baseball knowledge. And I said, you certainly don't want a Rebbe, a Rosh Kollel, giving Shayurim on Joe DiMaggio and Lou Gehrig and Babe Ruth, etc., etc. Okay, so you go for a limited time. Not only do you go for a limited time, but in being a shaliach, being a shliach from Israel, the first year you have to learn the mentality, you have to learn the language. Okay, I admit, if I would go back to America or Canada, it doesn't take me long to become an American again or to understand Canadian mentality. It'll take me exactly 29 minutes. But if an Israeli comes, even if he speaks a nice English, he did well in his bagrut in English, He still has to learn the mentality. He has to remember, I was in St. Louis and a shaliach came in from Israel his first year there. I was there when he had just arrived. And I remember everyone was telling him he has to improve his English and he has to learn what baseball is about. And there's a lot of truth to this. But a Chabotnik, then you're there a year, you learn. The second year, you function. The third year, you're already dreaming what you're going to do when you get back to Israel. A Chabotnik goes, he goes for life. So I made the comment that we spoke about one of the famous shluchim, who everyone tells me was a tzaddik yisod olam, Rabbi Levitansky. When he died, he was in L.A. and he died in California. And he left in his will, he wants to be buried in the cemetery of his community. See, that already tells you that's a shliach, a shaluach, and the Rebbe comes to the community, he comes for eternity. And just last week, tragically, to me he's a youngster yet, Rabbi Yehoshua Gordon, 66 years old, the son of the person I rabbinated with, Shalom Dov Gordon in Maplewood, and Rabbi Yehoshua Gordon was born in Maplewood, spent his first years in Maplewood, New Jersey, and he passed away. He's the outstanding Chabad teacher on their website where they have classes. They now put an app up where you can get all his different shiurim. People rave about him. A young man, fabulous, never died, 66. And he left in his will to be buried next to Rabbi Levitansky. So there too, you see the same concept that the Chabadnik comes, not for a minute or two, but he comes for life. Okay. Now, then we raise the issue, and it's a very serious issue. With all that we've said positive about Chabad, there are some real problems with Chabad that are particularly felt by rabbis across the world. And what are these problems that we're referring to? And this took us, we ended off last week's class, we ended off with a very important comment, a very basic comment, and as I told you, I'm saying something very simple, but something very deep. I repeat it again. I got some comments from Chabadnikim that they were blown away and totally in agreement with me. Whether I'm right or wrong, I don't know. But from my point of view, I hold this to be axiomatic to being a Torah Jew. I remember I said to you in 1980 when Mori Rebbe Rav Soloveitchik, when the Rav went to visit the Rebbe at that famous Fabregen, so I asked the question, when they looked at each other, did they look at each other with misgivings? In other words, did the Rav look at the Rebbe? Ah, chaval, that my friend from Berlin didn't become a Litvisha Rosh Yeshiva. And did the Rebbe look at the Rav, my friend from Berlin, chaval, that he didn't become a Lubavitcher Chassid? And my own feeling is they absolutely looked at each other with awe. And to me, this is the secret of our Hashkafa. There are many ways to approach God. You can't coerce a person into thinking exactly the same way. It goes against the creation of the world. Mori Rebbe would constantly stress that the image of God within us is our ability to think differently. The Gemara in Brachot, Tzalem Elokim, the Gemara in Brachot, right towards the end where it talks about Brachot that you have to make when you see tens of thousands of Jews, you acknowledge the fact that the Ribbono Shel Olam created so many beautiful human beings, but yet everyone is different psychologically, mentally, biologically, emotionally. Every human being is a little world unto himself. And therefore, not everyone will be happy to be a chassid, not everyone will be happy to be a litvak. You have to find your spectrum. Halacha demands, commands obedience. And that's where I differ with some of my colleagues, such as Rabbi Riskin just came out, again, very briefly, and I don't want to start quoting and get involved, but very briefly, you know that the Tsar, the Minister of Education, who I voted for and I support, and many of my grandchildren voted for him. So he visited a conservative day school in New York, and the chief rabbi, Rabbi David Lau, critiqued him for visiting a Solomon Schechter school. And Rabbi Rishkin just came out defending Bennett for visiting the school. And Rabbi Rishkin has a whole piece where he begins, conservative rabbis are my colleagues. They're working with me to fight assimilation. I don't agree with that. The conservative rabbi today, you saw what I read to you in class yesterday. I'm still, and Alex laughs at me. He says, Rebbe, that's what's getting you upset, that they're matter legumes. They're matter every Easter in the world. I said, no, to be matter legumes, you don't have to, it's Ribbono Shel Olam. I know the halacha, I know where I'm coming from, I know I can give a week's worth of shayurim on Kitniot and Pesach, and I know it halacha l'maisa as well from the Israeli army. I'm not talking now in theory, I had experience cleaning rice for Pesach, as you all know. I can describe to you in detail how you check the rice before Pesach. But Ribbono Shel Olam, the reasons they gave, to take away the barriers, to go back to the Gemara, to forget about 1,800 years of halachic history. Ribbono Shel Olam, no wonder you can be matir driving to shul on Shabbos, eating fish in a tray restaurant, homosexual activity, lo aleinu, lo aleinu. They're part of the problem. They are creating assimilation. Look at Bernie Sanders, everyone a Jew, and Freitzach, Hayid, Ribbono Shel Olam, married to a Catholic woman. So halacha demands commands.
Nobody really pays attention to that anyway, though. It's just a reflection of...
No, beside that, but if you write it and publish it and signed on, I know some of those rabbis, so-called, went to yeshiva universities. Learned with proper Gedolei Yisrael, and they signed on to. One woman refused to sign on. I got one woman there. There are many women rabbis on the committee. This is the committee on Jewish law and Kleinikai. All right. Anyway, but Hashkafa, I never yet saw the Gemara reach an outright decision on any Hashkafic issue. Fine. Our problem with Chabad is, and this is. I'm now going to quote from, I got many letters, but I'm quoting from the one I consider 100% reliable, who's had endless experience in this world. This is Rabbi Yoshua Grinstein. I explained to you my relationship with him, my Talmud, his father was my Talmud, and he's upset with me that I'm painting Chabad in such beautiful terms. He says, all over the world, they act in a manner that can be summed up in one phrase, my way or the highway. Or as I heard it many times, there are only two types of Jews in the world, those who believe in the Rebbe and those who will yet believe in the Rebbe. And now he gives me cases that actually happened. And remember, he's on top of this, he's dealing with rabbis in communities. On campus, there is an OU rabbi. Now, the OU has an outreach program today on campus. It's outreach to yeshiva high school graduates to see that they remain firm. I mean, you got to remember what we're up against. My grandsons, thank God, were raised in Israel, born in Israel, raised in Israel. So they go to Hebrew University, they go to Bar Ilan University, they go to Ariel, they go to Tel Aviv, they go to the Technion. Wherever my grandchildren are, but there's a Torah presence. No one is going to throw away Yiddishkeit because they're chiloniyim at Hebrew University. And the Torah presence grows stronger and stronger. It has many implications for what is happening in Israel. But in America, a kid goes to a secular college. He's all of 17. He's not reaching university after Hezder, after Rami. He's not reaching university in his 20s. I started university, I was all of 17 years old. Rabban Lichtenstein graduated YU, if I'm not mistaken, graduated Yeshiva College, he was 19. If I'm not mistaken, it can be checked out. Rabban graduated high school at 14. If I have it right, he graduated high school at 14, Chaim Berlin, sat 2 years in the Beis Medrash and went through Kol HaTorah Kula. I don't know if he ever went through Shas again, Al HaSeidah. but his knowledge of Shas Ba'al Peh, which he knew literally every daf, every amud, was from the 2 years from 14 to 16 in the Chaim Berlin Beis Medrash. And then he came to Yeshiva College. I think 3 years later he graduated. I was a contemporary with him at Yeshiva College. Then he went to Harvard and he came back to Yeshiva after he got his doctorate. Now, so here a kid goes away and they tell me, and it hurts, that 20% of the graduates of Yeshiva high schools throw Torah away, give up 3,500 years of the history of their family, of the blood in their veins. It hurts.
Alex,
I'm speaking facts now. I don't know what we argued about, but I never argue. We dialogue. Understand? There are plenty. You are daydreaming that Lakewood. We're going to come to Lakewood.
I know that. I know what the problems are.
But 1 second. You say, we don't say there more. I say we all are suffering.
Yes.
Terrible percentages.
But it's much higher.
You think it's much higher? To say that, okay, Kibaldi, I'm not here. I love Lakewood. I learned in Lakewood when Lakewood was Kletz. Don't think Lakewood today is America. When I learned in Lakewood, when you came in to the yeshiva, they put an oxygen mask on you. The air was from Lithuania. You understand? There was mamish litter. You have no idea. The alter talmidim, the survivors, Rebarin's inner circle, what I saw there. This is why I'm a good Jew today. Oh boy, I don't play games with my Yiddishkeit. The right-wing world has a big problem with Rakefet. You understand? Anyone else they can dismiss. Yes, Nishtrum, he's a Kalia, he's a Kippah Sluganik, you know, what all that implies for them. With Rakefet, they have a big problem. He is a religious Zionist, but they got to stay awake many nights trying to find that he's one little centimeter off the Torah Hashem Tamimah. I don't think he went a centimeter off. As far as I know, I think he's Baruch Hashem. All right, now, so this outreach program began with the OU. I believe the Zeif family sponsors it from Englewood, if I'm not mistaken. I know Heshi Zeif and his wife, and I know that Rabbi Schrader, my Talmud, is involved, and they do wonderful work. So on campus, there is an OU rabbi with a minyan amongst times Friday night with a mean following. Okay? The Chabadnik that only opens a Chabad house on campus as the former is not enough, but comes to the minyan, the original OU minyan, Friday night in order to steal students, to make a minyan for himself, plus dinner at his home from the former minyan. When I ask him, why does he do this? His answer is, quote, "The minyan is not nisachari, so it is not a real minyan."
Oh, come on.
That's what he's quoting.
Oh, come on.
Alex, do me a favor. Alex, don't argue with me.
But I'm also laughing.
Write down.
So usually they're first, and then the Litvish Kiru rabbis and the Oyu Kiru come in, and
Alex, write down immediately Grunstein at OTS.org, IIL, and email him and challenge him. Don't challenge me. Challenge Rabbi Grunstein. Write it down. You have paper and pencil, or you're going to remember it by heart? You're Rabbi Kahn. Which is it? Rabbi Yo Kahn didn't have to write anything down, but I don't think we're on his level. You got it? Grunstein, Grunstein, at OTS.org.IL. I also couldn't believe that this is true. Okay.
If it is true, then that's not a typical...
I'll deal with it. Let me just state the cases. I know what I have to say. Many refuse to eat at other people's homes, including the Rabbanim. When the Rabbanim ask them why they refuse their own invitations, not Balabatim, but the Rabbanim themselves, they say, the Rabbanim say to them, "We have Chalav Yisrael." Eventually, their answer is, "It is not Chabad." A Gera Chassid and even a Satma Chassid that probably has questions regarding the Shkita. And this happened to me when I was in Halifax. But Chabad doesn't ask. If it's not Chabad, not kosher for them. All right. Now, Chabadnikim do. I have to say that they have a chumrah. This I have to tell you, that they don't eat in anyone else's home unless it's a Chabadnik. They have chumras that they have their own shechita. It goes further than that. The Chabad Yisrael, all the Hakada, and I have to tell you, if I could get offended, I don't get offended. Any chance that I would get offended in life was taken out of me back in 61 in Lower Merion Synagogue. It was an experience that colored my lifetime.
With the wine.
But I have to tell you, with the wine, right? But I have to tell you that people came out of Russia, that we risked our lives, the shlichim that I sent, etc., etc., Chabad that came out, they wouldn't eat in your house. It was unbelievable. I couldn't believe it. I had the experience in my house, and these people coming out of Russia who barely survived with Kashrut, and here you're coming to people who were mice and nefesh to save you, to go in, to risk what, an American kid. You have any idea what communism was, what the airport was like? That alone scared the heck out of you. Just the airport in Moscow, with the army marching up and down with no lights, with the KGB looking at you. And that's a Chabad Chumrah, right? He's very upset. A case. Three, a Shomer Shabbos 18-year-old kid finds out at 18, after living his whole life as a Shomer Torah mitzvah, that his mother had a questionable conversion. Now, I've got to tell you that this question of a questionable conversion is something that comes up in the Kolel. If the YU has what, four different Kolelim, three in America, one here, am I correct? If I'm off, I'm off by one. Maybe it's four in America, one here. Every year, a number of young people in the various Kolelim are converted to Chumrah. I had the same problems right here in this Kolel. A kid finds out his great-grandmother converted 120 years ago in Canada, in the United States, and they weren't total Shomer Torah mitzvah. The kid's mother became a Balat Shuva. She was a granddaughter. So they're Choshesh, I told you. I once had a problem here that really was a lot more difficult than the problems they have in America, because the young man that I dealt with right here in this room was a son of a Kohen. The father was a Kohen, and the mother was a granddaughter of this woman. So if he needs a conversion, how can he be a Kohen? And he was raised like a Kohen. All right, we solved the problem. That's a story unto itself. But we solved the problem of Pihalacha, obviously. So this kid finds out. Thus, the very next day, they did Hatafat Ram Dam Brit and brought him to the mikvah. As he was a Shomer Shabbos already, Kabbalat Mitzvah is a given. In other words, you don't have to teach him anything. The kid is a Shomer Shabbos. He's from, the kid knows how to learn it, Daf Gemara. Three Rabbanim were there, one Ashkenazi, one Sephardi, and one Chabad. Please, Alex, don't argue with me now. You got the address and let me know what your answer. As he was in the water, they asked him a few basic questions as required by the Gemara and Yevamah. If you heard my sermon 30 years ago, the Gemara and Yevamah, Daf Mem Zayin, Amal Aleph Mem Zayin, Mevavah Mem Bet, right before he dunked, the Chabad rabbi asked, I noticed that you are growing a beard. The 18-year-old convert, in quotations, answered, yes, it's Sphira, but after Lag Bom, I plan to shave with an electric shaver again. The Chabadnik then stated, I'm sorry, I can't be part of this conversion. This kid is Makabel et Kol HaMitzvot Chutz Midavar Echad, the Issa to shave. The Rabbanim argued with him for over an hour to leave his Chabad Chumras outside the room, and that their custom not to touch the beard is not chutz meidover echad, but he would not budge. Thus, this kid had to be flown the next week to another community where they could get a beitin and take him to mikvah. So you see, here again, you see that attitude, my way or the highway. And this is why I told you, I never had a more beautiful picture published, the Baron Rakefet in Ami, where they critiqued me and attacked me, and wow, what they said about me. Oh, wow, wow, wow. Wow. Flippant, I quote, end quote. I don't mind any attack in the world, but to call me flippant is not right. I gave more Sherman Das Torah than anyone walking the face of this earth today. But I can't repeat it. I can only refer to it. I have much, much more to teach. Give me another 120 years to get it all out of my system, Be'ezrat Hashem. So my daughter hit your mother hit the nail on the head. I showed her the picture. I said, I don't know where they got that picture. It definitely was taken when I was honored by Bernard Weber Graduate School a year and a half ago or so. And evidently someone snapped it. I was giving you shiur because I see the associate dean of Bernard Weber sitting right in back of me. So why did they publish this beautiful picture of Ara Kefet? To show the world, this is who you look up to. These are the shirim you listen to, the sheikhs, the eisvaf, the trumpetic, the pushtak. Take a look. No beard, no payers, no black clothes. Kifas shruga. All right? Ribbono shel olam. I sat in the rabbinate in when I came to Newark, New Jersey. Newark was still an ir v'ein b'Yisrael. And we had all types. We had a Varcha Rabbanim second to none. There were YU people. There were Lakewood people. There were Chabatnikim. There were other types of Chassidish Rabbanim. Everyone got along. I told you, Rabbi Gordon, the father of Josh, who just died, Rav Shalom Dover, we were bosom buddies. I write about him in Washington, right or wrong. We were bosom buddies. Then Rav Shmuel Bogomilsky came in. No one looked down upon the other one. But here, this young rabbi, he's going to shave. It's chutz midavar echad. A community asked us to submit candidates to them to be the rav of the community. We did. And they chose one. A day before the contract was signed or would be signed, we got a call from one of our major donors, who asked us not to place our rabbi there. When we said in shock, but you always want us to place rabbis more and more each year, he said, indeed, I don't understand. Let me pass the phone over to the rabbi. The rabbi was a Chabatnik who convinced our donor from another community altogether, not to allow the placement to go through for one reason. He's not Chabad. And you're going to see this comes up time and time again. A graduate came to a community with a Jewish school that served treif. In other words, it's what they call a community day school. He got a donor to cover the costs, difference in price, to save kosher meals. A day before the deal was sealed, the donor called our graduate and said that he's having second thoughts. When our graduate ran off to meet him, he was told a local Chabadnik convinced him not to give money as he wanted to start a real school, that is a Chabad school, in a number of years. And since the local Jewish school is not real enough, let them eat treif till he gets his act together and has a Chabad school. And by the way, something very similar like this happened in Bridgeport, Connecticut. Not with treif, but where you could have had a day school with everyone joined together and the Chabad element in the community refused to join, and it took years until finally there was a day school or two different day schools in that community. And I've heard that time and again from people from that area. I was at the induction ceremony in a community where the local community leaders had to tell the local Chabad Rav to stop on putting tefillin on people during the silent Shmona Esrei of Mincha. He answered, this Mincha is not a Mincha, it's not Nusach Ari. Now, these are real complaints. These are not something that come out of nowhere. I have other letters hold on, I want to say something. You'll hear what I have to say. These are real complaints. This really happened, and it happens, and anyone who's going to go into the rabbinate may or may not encounter these difficulties. And I hope that Chabadnikim are listening, And I want to explain, in my humble opinion, what brings about this attitude. And this leads to another critique of Chabad. If you notice, there are endless Chabad Rabbanim all over the world, going into the world, becoming shluchim. Many of them start very young. Many of them are not that learned. And this too is a critique of Chabad. One thing about Yeshiva University, which all of you sitting here understand very well, you can say what you want about Yeshiva University, but to get smicha from YU is an accomplishment. There are high standards. Chabad is a little bit more lenient. I imagine part of the thinking is that if you give a person smicha, and I've always thought this as well, he remains a more responsible Jew. Somehow, if you have smicha, it impacts upon you. It influences you. And it could also be they need shluchim over the world. Many of the shluchim are not the greatest lamdanim in the world. But they're instilled with a certain pride that you are a chabadnik. You are different. You are special. You have commitments beyond and above. This is beautiful. This may very well be true. Chabadnikim, I still remember my first encounter with those that are Karev L'Malchut, when the Rav was sitting shiva for his mother and there was the knock on the door and a kid named Donnie Rothkopf, well, he wasn't such a kid already, he was already a Rosh Yeshiva in YU giving Sheyurim, but sitting with his Rebbe, he's a kid. A kid named Donnie Rothkopf was the only one in the house with the Rav because it was like 9 o'clock in the morning, it was early, and I had to give shiur later at 11 o'clock, so I came to see the Rav at, let's say, 9:15, and I told my students to do Chazara, and I would come back. I'm being Menachem Avil Mori Rebbe, who was sitting shiva across the street from the yeshiva in his mother's house on Amsterdam Avenue, and the knock on the door, and I said to Rebbe, I'll answer the knock. And I open the door and I see two men with the longest beards I ever saw in my life. I didn't know then, now pi Kabbalah, Chabadnikim never touched their beard.
Also, according to the halacha of the Tzemach Tzedek
Psa. Tzemach Tzedek Chabad, okay,
no,
say
not only because of the
Because of the sheet and halacha, finally, I can accept it graciously, not a problem for me. But I remember, I'm not criticizing the Chumras, Adarabba v'Adarabba, but what has to be instituted, and I'm sure there are Rebbeim that do it, you have to tell a student, just as I've said in class many times, they're Yud Beit Shvatim, they're Yud Beit Degolim, there's endless midrashic material, how every Shevet is different from the other Shevet. The Rav gave an unbelievable talk. I hope when they come out with the OU Chumashim of the Rav that's being edited by Arnold Lustiger, who's very, very capable. Dr. Lustiger is a very bright, competent individual who never heard a shear from the Rav in his life. He was raised in right-wing yeshivat. He raised his own children in right-wing yeshivat in America. And I hope when he gets to Devarim, he'll do the shiur where the Rav speaks about every shevet having its own unique abilities. This shevet was for Torah, this shevet was for science, this shevet was for economics, and he developed it so beautifully, and that's the way to go. We can be strong, we can be firm, but we have to acknowledge there are other points of view. I also want to say something, I may be right, I may be wrong, time will tell, that as time marches on, there's no question that Chabad has, how can I give you a simple example? Everyone said when my dear friend, colleague, mentor, Rabbi Dr. Bernard Lander would not be alive anymore, the whole Touro complex would disappear. And somehow, I don't know, Rabbi Lander is no longer alive, Zeichet Tzadik Levracha, and Turo is bigger than ever. YU is financially strapped. Turo Baruch Hashem has money. And Chabad, everyone figured the Rebbe will be gone. And take a look what happened. More shluchim and more shluchim. But there's no doubt in my mind, I heard this from real top Chabadnikim from within, that you're now dealing with a third or fourth generation. You're dealing with people who never saw the Rebbe. It was a tremendous shock for me when I saw in the Kollel shifting gears that by the late 80s, I already had students who never heard Rabbi Soloveitchik give a shiur. And there's no question, it's a different YU, it's a different Kollel, time marches on. Gemara said it so beautifully, Yiftach bedoro kashmul bedoro. We have to accept the reality. I don't want to sit here and yell and shout and put you down. I remember my rebbeim. What kind of generation do we have today? And ich gedenk was is given in mir, was is given in Telz, was is given in Slabotka. And they're telling us about Telz, Mir, and Slabotka, where little American kids feeling third rate, fourth rate. I want to tell you, I'm an old man today, Baruch Hashem. Naha hayiti v'gam zakanti. I have not shamed my rebbeim. And Baruch Hashem, with our little accomplishments in life, we can match Mir and Telz and Slabotka. Yiftach b'doro k'shmul b'doro. So YU moved on. You have new rebbeim. All right, there's machlaikis. That's the nature of being a Jew. We have problems. I don't have to tell you. The breakaway, what they call open orthodoxy, what Rav Kefet calls neoconservatism. We have problems, life marches on, but we have leadership, we have learning, Baruch Hashem. Chabad is today a third, fourth generation. Someone who yet saw the Rebbe, all right, he sees a video, it speaks to him, it moves him. Not only that, to really understand the Rebbe, you have to know Yiddish. You have to hear the Rebbe in Yiddish. You have to be in that milieu. Today, what kid, fourth generation, fifth generation American, what kid knows Yiddish? You understand? It's like people trying to listen to the Rav. What are they listening to? The English talks of the Rav. All right, the Rav's English was brilliant. His command of language was brilliant. He had a certain accent I can imitate. Everyone loves to imitate the Rav. When we did the documentary on the Rav, what was his name? Berkel, the actor, Theodore Berkel, right? Do I have the right name? Am I pronouncing it right? Baruch Hashem, Theodore Berkel. So he acts in the movie. He talks like the Rav. He reads the Rav without. He tries to put on an accent. It's not the Rav's accent, but all right, it's an accent. Mela. Today, the Rebbe, that you need a new Rebbe. At a certain point, you need a live Rebbe. You need someone to guide you, someone to tell you off, someone to say to you that being a Chabadnik is wonderful and good and healthy for those who feel at home in Chabad. But please don't put down any other expressions of Torah Hashem. Cooperate. Help. And
there's a lot of truth in what you're saying, but you're not seeing the flip side, which is that the opposite is much stronger. He's giving these stories here of the Chabad rabbi who shows up. The opposite is true in most places. Chabad rabbi is there first. He's doing all this work, these other people come in and they undermine what he does. The reason Chabadniks don't want to cooperate is not only because they're arrogant or stubborn, it's also because
what I'm saying applies to them, but you're lacking for sabonot. You'll see what I have. I have a lot of material. We're going to get there. But I want to give you something from the Rebbe, not from Alex or not from Aaron Rakefet now, okay? From the Rebbe. When I was in Australia, and you'll see the Rebbe, his whole approach, they just came up, I'll show you later, a Jew just died at the age of 90 in Israel. They found 100 plus letters from the Rebbe to this Jew. And this Jew was a total Mizrahiite, 1,000% a tzionidati. He loved the Rebbe. The Rebbe loved him. The Rebbe never ever told him, stop being a tzionidati, a mizrachis, and become like the, most of the Chabadnikim. You see, the Rebbe, that's, you see the article. The Rebbe understood, this is this Jew, this is where he belongs. He was, this is where he's happy. This is a different individual. But more than that, I want to tell you a story, that says it all. Listen to this little story. I was in Australia, and I was the guest of the Mizrahi community. I never had more, maybe I shouldn't say more, a number of times I've had Gilui Eliyahu in my life, and this was Mamish Minashamayim Zikuni. What happened? I arrived to Australia. It's a tremendous trip. I don't recommend it unless you have to go. It's 3 days of travel. And the first night I'm there is Yom Yerushalayim. And they're having a big communal affair for Yom Yerushalayim. Now, I am the public speaker. So I didn't know that in Australia, Mizrahi and Chabad intermerge, interact. They are the heart of the Torah community. So I arrived in Australia. I'm speaking that night, and I began my talk with a Hasidic story that the Rav told us. I can't go into it now. It was with the Chanukat Bayit of Yeshivat Chachmei Lublin and what the Maram Lublin said at that Hanukkah Tabayit. And I began to talk, quoting the Rav, quoting the Maram Lublin. Never had more success in my life with the talk. The Chabadnikim made it up. Here's a guy from Israel, a Litvisha, a YU guy, a Tzioni, a Mizrachiite, and Chassidish Vart, Meredik Vart from the Maram Lublin, quoting the Rav. We fell in love with each other. As a result, the leader of the Chabad community at that moment of time, Yossel Gutnik, I didn't realize he's married to a Talmidah of mine from Michala Sterner knew at the time. She studied with me. And he didn't know what to do for me. And he's taking me around, giving me a tour of Jewish, that part of Australia, Melbourne. And we come in Melbourne. There's a little bit of everything in the world. You have a sprinkling of Satma, a sprinkling of Lakewood, a sprinkling, everything in the world. The big ones, sprinkling of Gur, but the big ones are Mizrahi and Chabad. Okay? So he takes me to the Lakewood Kollel. And I walk into the Kollel. There's a tremendous billboard, dedication of the building dedicated by Yossela and Sterner Gutnik. And I look at Gutnik, I say to him, you gave this money to Lakewood? This is the late 80s, early Lakewood, that was involved in one attack after another against the Chabad, against the Chabad Hasidim, against the Rebbe, one attack after another, what was going on? Wow. He said to me, good question. He says, I asked the Rebbe. I said to the Rebbe, Rebbe, they want to open a Lakewood branch in Australia. They asked me for money to dedicate the building. What should I do? And the Rebbe told them, Adarabba the Adarabba. These were Goodman's words to me. Adarabba the Adarabba. All the more. Put the money in to the Lakewood building. See, that's already vision. That's above the crowd. But I want to show you the ultimate. I'm going to read three lines to you. Three lines. But these lines aren't read unless Yomo is willing to pledge 36 $36,000 linked, or 36,000 shekel linked to the dollar. How do I do it? To the IOU list. Yomo, willing to honor the Rebbe? What do you say? Yes or no? I can't hear.
I don't have that kind of money.
The Rebbe never, yours truly never collected a penny from his student in life. You'd expect him to start now?
No, but I can't even pledge because I can't start.
Rafi, would you co-sign for him? Okay. Baruch Hashem. Gentlemen, watch. This is from a Chabad website. And a beautiful article appeared here about the guy named Rakefet and the series of lectures about the Rebbe. Very nice article. Take a look at the picture they got from the OU. It's a publicity picture from when Washington came out. And then they knew how to go to the OU. They give the OU credit, photo OU Productions. Fine, I apologize for wearing a tie, but this picture was taken in the OU offices, and when in Rome, you have to do like the Romans. I think I borrowed it. I don't know if that's my car yet. Okay. So, so when you look at these articles, fine. What I enjoy looking at is, you have to have time, but I like to see what the bloggers blog in. It's it's like Jerome Mintz, it's like George Kranzler doing a sociological doctorate. And it's fascinating to see the way the Hamon Ha'am thinks. Alex, don't correct me, I agree with you 100%. But let me tell you, this person who blogged in, man alive, I love it. I quote, you almost stand next to me so people will see I'm reading it. And because come on, Charlie's not going to believe this. This is the 15th comment. Make Rabbi Rakefet a chassid of the Rebbe. If Rabbi Rakefet is such an admirer of the Rebbe, he should be brought closer to chassidut. Has he ever been to the Ohel? He comes into America sometimes, in the summer for a few weeks usually, and sometimes at other times too. People should work on him to go to the Ohel, to grow a beard, to learn Tanya, etc. It is never too late. Morty, get my point? Now, I have to tell you, Bifneyam V'yed, I've been to the Ohel. How many times have you been to the Ohel, Alex?
Okay. Maybe you've been more.
Take my word for it, I've been to the Ohel more times than you have. I always have students who take me, who want to take me, and I never say no. I was at the Ohel before there was an Ohel. When the Rebbe was first buried next to his father-in-law, nothing was built on top yet. I was there when there were almost no kvitlach yet on top, nothing. Then I saw the Ohel and the way you go down and the way you prepare and the room and everything they've done. It is unbelievable. But Aaron Rakefet, is that the...
Not yet.
Okay. Aaron Rakefet, Baruch Hashem, I am who I am, for better or for worse. But you see the difference in thinking. Now, I have to tell you.
The number of times I heard them rant about how living in Israel is the only thing, and they would pressure every guy in a Baal Shem Yeshiva and give a spiel and talk about how that's the only, you know, and it's better to be secular in Israel.
Alex,
I'm just pointing a point. Alex,
listen to the Rebbe very carefully. Do we have a medical doctor in this room? Alex, my dear student, suffers from savlonitis. Lack of pain. I'm going to get there. You don't believe me. I'm going to get there. But let me do it properly. Let me do it like a litvak, with depth. We're going to get there. You don't believe a litvak can have depth. Baruch Hashem. We're going to absolutely get there. Not today, but we're going to get there. But anyway, I want to tell you, if this letter this blog, someone should work on him and he should grow a beard. He said, first of all, and Tanya, what? I don't know Tanya? Come on, what? Donnie, what am I, an Amoric? Who quoted Lamed Perik, Lamed Bet in class? I quote Tanya, I quote many things from Tanya. I'm a Talmud of the Rav, of course I have to know Tanya. Likutei Torah, I also happen to know a little. But that's where, you remember with the Rav, he wanted to teach Likutei Torah that summer, and Menachem Benach shut the Rav down. I mean, that's an unbelievable story that shows you who the Rav is, who Menachem Benach, where he's coming from. You got to know the relationship between them, because Menachem Benach's uncle was the Rav's best friend. That's how the Rav got to Berlin. Rav Moshe entrusted him to Genachovsky. That's Menachem's uncle. Benach is Genachovsky. And the Rav had Menachem enjoyed a very special relationship with the Rav. It was like family, mamish like family. And he shot the Rav down. That shows you. But it also shows you that a Rosh Yeshiva is not a Rebbe. No one can shoot a Rebbe down. A Rebbe can say what he wants, do what he wants, and the Hasidim have to follow. And you all know the stories with they're boasting about whose Rebbe is bigger. So one Hasid says, my Rebbe is so big, where he walks, on the right it's raining, on the left it's raining, and in the middle where the Rebbe walks, there's no rain. And the other Hasid says, my Rebbe is bigger, on the right is it's Shabbos, on the left it's Shabbos, and the Rebbe Gates is Chol, it's Vachetek. So you see, a Chassid, he can't do anything. The Rebbe rules, but a Litvak, you are stuck. You have to relate to your students. You're a Rosh Yeshiva. You have to be able to teach what they want to hear, what they're interested in. You got to get feedback. It's a different ballpark of Rosh Yeshiva. A Rebbe? Wow. So you should know that I gave a public talk a few times Sunday. They have this beautiful thing in YU, the Sunday based medrash. In America, you have a Sunday, which we desperately need in Israel. When we will finally have a Sunday here, it'll be a great, great achievement. It'll help with Shmirat Shabbos, with the sports and everything. We don't have it yet. We'll get there, Be'ezrat Hashem. We have a Friday, which it's half and half Friday, but we need a real Sunday here to visit family, etc., etc. So YU has a Sunday-based medrash. So a number of times I've been in America at that time of the year. Now I'm not going to go to New York in December. The older you get, I'm living in Israel so many years already, almost half a century. I can't put up with the cold like where I was raised. Florida, I was in Florida a few weeks ago, Mela, even though it wasn't good weather, but it was still not freezing. It's not New York. So I gave a talk at YU a number of times. I don't recall, this talk may have been on Hasidus. I remember when I turned 75, the day I turned 75, I gave a talk in Rav Aaron Cutler. And there too, I couldn't believe the bloggers, this was already in YU, that a woman wrote in, wow, Rabbi Rakefet spoke an hour and a half about Rav Aaron Cutler, we'd love to talk, but it was amazing. He didn't say one critical word. I can't believe, what idiots in the world. I'm going to talk at YU and Rav Aaron Cutler and criticize him, all right? So other people wrote in, in Lakewood they criticize YU. So what? I have to be like them? I have to be a good Jew? I finished the talk on Hasidus and a woman, I said at the end, I wish there would be Litvakin left in the world. And a woman criticized me. Why do we need Litvakin? Everyone should be a Hasid. Gentlemen, we have to go down to the... And anyone know where we have to go? I think it's one flight below the basement. Okay, we're back. It wasn't the recordings are on, right? Yomo. Okay. I thought it would be worse, but thank God. But it was only for schools, right?
Yeah.
But it probably scares everyone in the whole country. The siren went off in the whole country. Wow. Okay. And now, let me move one drop further. Look, there's no question that human beings interact, and at times there are tensions. What has ultimately happened with Chabad, and I absolutely agree with Alex that these examples are miyotanika. I can't say it doesn't exist. I can't say it isn't felt. I've heard it from too many people. On the other hand, I know a lot of Chabadnikim who accept me for what I am with the same joy I accept them for what they are. And we get along fabulously. So I trust it's not the majority, but there is built-in tension which is inevitable in life. When I finish Chabad and I still have a way to go, there's a lot yet that has to be discussed. I continued with history of Torah in the United States, and I'm going into a topic that no one but no one has yet lectured on publicly. It'll take me at least a year or more. The history of the rabbinate in the United States, the Orthodox rabbinate. I'll cover the era from 1900 to, I've already spoken about the 1800s, but I'll cover from 1900, Be'ezrat Hashem, God should give strength, through 1960. I have to end off at 1960 because from 1960 on, I'm in the rabbinate and I have a prejudice. I'm subjective, I'm not objective anymore. You understand, in scholarship, when I write a memoir, let's say Washington, I have the right to write about the 60s, the 70s, the 80s, the 90s, the 2000s, because I'm writing a memoir. A memoir, if anyone tells me it's an autobiography, I slap their face and I tell them off. I say it's a scholarly memoir, not an autobiography. There's a difference. If you read my introduction, I pride myself that in Washington, every word I wrote is correct. I researched it to the end. No one has found a factual mistake in 520 pages. Generally, when you read a memoir, a person's memory is abgeschwacht, it's weaker, and you'll find mistakes, and he's misinterpreting. Interpretation is mine, but the facts, I did the best I could to be absolutely accurate. But when you talk about scholarship, you can't have a subjective interest. You have to do your best to be totally objective. In the United States, there was so much machloket in the rabbinate, out in the field, and it's inevitable because people are fighting for life, fighting on the same turf. We're all human beings. Everyone needs panas. Everyone needs income. Some individuals need cover, need respect, need to feel they're honored. Hakine v'hakavet v'hata'eva motzien et ha'adam min ha'olam. It's a Maimon Chazal in Pirkei Avot, and you can quote me, it's my own vort, that it's not that you have three, that always in life you're suffering from these three problems. It goes in stages. When you're young, it's ta'ava. A young man, he wants to conquer the world, he wants endless money, he wants endless joy out of life, wine, women, sex. So a young man struggles with ta'ava. When you grow older, you're in your 50s already, 45, 50, 55, 60, you're jealous. Kina, why didn't I do so well? This person went into the rabbinate, he's making $250,000 a year, I'm only making $70,000 a year. There's kina, the cars. My grandchildren are upset with the small cars I drive. Rebbe, I have students, they want to see the Rebbe. Malchut, Rushin, you understand? You know what I'm talking about. The Rushin Rebbe wouldn't drive a little Hyundai 120. The Rushin Rebbe would drive a Cadillac. The line, the Rebbe, people are jealous, so that's kina. But when you grow older, what rabbis suffer from, covered. Oh boy, this rabbi had covered, me get them up covered, who we see in a maritz, a boor, and any array, hey, they can shlerin in, vasak in tonim, what did he do with his life? Oh boy, do you suffer from covered. So there was endless problems in America, as we will see. It's endless. I don't have to tell you, those of you familiar with some of my published scholarship, Bernard Revel, Four Editions, the Silvira, Four Editions, Rakefet Aharon, the piece I won an award on after postdoctoral research on the Ridbaz, the problems you will see. So it's inevitable that you're going to have Chabad, and you're going to have other Orthodox rabbis. At times there's going to be conflict, there's going to be problems of kinner and covered. It's the human beast, it's the nature of the human being. As Rav Kefir has said a million times over, the Hasidic movement conquered the world. The Musa movement, from the time it began, 1840, if the Musa movement conquered 1,000 proper Musanics, I'm overstating the case. You understand, Murray? You know the difference? Because to be a chassid, you can be a chassid on the simplest level. I grow a beard, I put on a gatel, I go to the ohel, I watch a video, or I go to those years, I went to a fabrengen, I lifted a kos to the Rebbe. You can be on the simplest level. There's much higher levels. Rav Menachem Kasher, Rav Shlomo Yosef Sevin, Rav Menachem Zemba. Wow, what are we talking about? But to be a Musanik is very, very difficult. So these problems are real. It's inevitable. What has happened, and this is to the credit of Chabad, and this defies imagination when you think back that in 1940, when the previous Rebbe arrived in America, the sixth Rebbe, and he gets off the boat, and there are a few thousand people who came out to greet them, greet him, many of them Mechallelei Shabbos, and they give the Rebbe advice. Remember, we spoke about this at the Greystone Hotel, and they tell the Rebbe, you suffered enough under the communists, under Hitler, it's time, the Rebbe's not well, you had a stroke, you should retire, we have a place in Lakewood for you, once a month the Hasidim will come out and drink L'chaim. And who would ever dream? The Rebbe said the next morning, he says, where I come from, remember what I told you? A Rebbe does not ask Hasidim for advice, he gives them advice. And ich weiß, dass Amerika ist nicht anders für die alten Heim, that America is not different than the old home. And who would believe it? Who they are? I mean, I spoke with people who knew the sixth Rebbe, who were there. And they said the Hasidim walked away with a quixotic attitude. You know, the Rebbe is a little bit old. He doesn't understand. It's America. We're successful in America. The Chabadnikim, who were close to the Rebbe in America, these were wealthy people. They later bought the Rebbe 770 in Eastern Parkway. And they all walked away with a quixotic attitude. You know, he's dreaming. Have a good cholam. I can't speak English anymore. Have a good dream. And Chabad today, time and again, I told you this happened to me when I represented the Jewish Agency. And right now, I'm repeating it again. A Chabadnik just was appointed to the governing board of governors or trustees of the Jewish agency. Chabadnik was just appointed. So Sharansky was boasting, oh, we not only have now Orthodox, Reform, and Conservative, we have a Chabadnik. And Chabad today is viewed, I told you when I participated that time at the hotel, in the representing the Jewish agency at the Hayat in Jerusalem, next to Mount Scopus, next to where you go. I spent the Shabbos there with Gran. I represented the Jewish agency, the slot for the Orthodox rabbi. So that night at the dinner, this person from the Jewish agency says, I'm very happy to welcome the Orthodox rabbi here, the Chabad rabbi here, the Conservative rabbi here, the Reform rabbi here. And I said to the Chabadnik, I never knew that you weren't Orthodox. Tonight we found out that you're Chabad and I'm Orthodox. But it is truth. It is so that Chabad has become an arm unto itself. It's characterized by many of the distinctions that we spoke about, their non-judgmental attitude, their ability to reach out, their ability to accept every Jew, their positivism, and above all, the fact that a Chabadnik comes and he's coming for life. This is not a 2, 3, 4 year deal. He is coming for life. So much so, even to be buried. I gave you two examples an hour ago, more than an hour ago, and where do they choose to be buried? Next to their kehila, where they lived, where they thrived, where they influenced. They want to be buried there. And I believe it's Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky. I know that he was buried in the cemetery between Brooklyn and Queens, in the Briska Cemetery, the Briska section, and everyone else was being shipped to Israel. Remember, we spoke about this, Rabbi Moshe Feinstein was being shipped, and Rabbi Yaakov evidently said, this, I hope it's Rabbi Yaakov, but I heard this in the name of an American Gadol, that this is where I lived, and America has to have Kvarim of Gedolei Israel as well. And this is a deep thought. Now, because Chabad is all over, and because of this explosion, you have tension. It is real tension throughout the world. And I want to elaborate on that tension, and I want to give you my own feeling. I won't be able to reach it today, but we'll do it. We'll be as Ratano Penleyov Koloch come into it next week. Now, and this has somewhat to do with what our dear student Alex raised the issue a little while ago. This article appeared in Makar Rishon. The date of the article is December 4th, 2015. And the article is entitled Milchamat HaYehudim, Battles Between Jews. And believe it or not, this article deals exactly with the critique that Rabbi Grunstein issued and that Alex alluded to. Chabad over the world, particularly in Europe, and their relationship with the established communities. Now, when you view Europe, and here again I come back to the story I told you with my colleagues, Rashi Yeshiva and Yeshiva University, some of them very prominent names that are known throughout the world, they wanted to ask Chabad. And they're convinced, and this very Beis Medrash, yours truly, battled with three of them, names that you all know very well, Rabbi Schechter, Willig, and Tversky. And they're... Yeah, and you know who Rabbi Tversky is? That's a Tonga, he's the Tonga Rebbe. If there's a Rebbe today, Tonga Rebbe of Boston. But their attitude towards Chabad, very negative. And Heschel argued with me, this is... Aaron Altman from South Africa wrote to me too how they daven shelo bizman. So I told him, I agree that tefillah shelo bizman, I in Ohel Rivka, where I've been davening, where I've been davening since 69. So the old time is, if they would see what's happened to Ohel Rivka today, they would close the place down and put the whole all of us that daven there and tolerate it into cherem. Today there's a Chabad Minyan Shabbos on the side shtibble. They begin at 10 o'clock. When I come in for Mincha, a quarter to one, Mincha is one, I come 10 to one, I get there a little early. I want to gossip with my friends. So I look into the shtibble. They're still fabrengen, drinking l'chaim, studying Tanya. I wrote to this young man, Aaron Altman, that... By 10 o'clock in the morning, when they're beginning the minyan, I've already davened, I've already made kiddush, already had breakfast, and already have a daf gemara with rishonim under my belt. You understand? At least a daf, could even be more. Depends what I'm learning. So, yes, tefillah shelo bizman, you have Chabad, is Chabad now. With Rebbe Heschel, we argued about that. But then the others claim every Chabadnik is a messianist. I told them that's not so. I have many Chabad people I know who are not messianists. And the whole question, if the Rebbe could have been Mashiach, I can give many lectures on it. It's not for now. We'll get to it. The Rebbe absolutely could have been Mashiach. And every Dor V'Dor, there's someone who has the ability. It's an open Gemara in Sanhedrin. Ke'chizkiyo HaMelech. They wanted to make a Mashiach. But the Dor is not Zakai, period. I heard that from the Rav, and the Rav brought proofs from the Rambam, very powerful proofs. So this, you cannot... But what really clinched it is not Rakefet arguing. I told you, when they got back to the States, I found out the whole drive against Chabad came to an end. So I was curious, how did it come to an end? So I found out the story. Rav Menachem Ganek told him, if we're going to wrestle Chabad, we got to close the OU down. All right? We spoke about this. Who's willing to live in Thailand? Who's willing to live in Timbuktu? Who's willing to live in Shanghai? Who's willing to live in Hong Kong? Yibani Shalom, Hashkachas are now being given all over the world. I think there are more than 50 plants in China that are under reliable Hashkacha. And by the way, most Hashkacha in the world today is reliable because people, these plants, these factories are getting Hashkacha because they want to export, they want to do business. And in order to do business, you need a reliable Hashkacha. So you have the OU, you have the Chafkei, you have the OK, all over the world, and who's doing the hashgacha? It's one thing to do hashgacha in suburban areas outside of New York, Detroit, Bachbeis, Boston, fine. The rabbi goes once a week. If they need a mashgiach, you get a mashgiach. He sleeps at home at night. I have students who work on hashgacha. I have a student from Atlanta, a student from Israel. They travel all over the world. How do they eat? What do they do? My student from Atlanta told my wife and myself, we were just mystified by his descriptions. He buys salmon, he wraps it in silver foil, and he puts it on the steam in the hotel, the radiator. And at the end of a half hour, he says, you turn it over, and an hour later, you have a good meal, vegetables you can buy, fruit you can buy. It's unbelievable. No, the same thing with Europe. You come to Europe, and this is what I alluded to. Chabad will go anywhere where there are Jews. And Chabad will go to Europe, and they will come, and they will stay for life. Europe has Jews left. France, of course, is the biggest community. England, I believe, is second in size. But then you have Belgium, you have the Scandinavian countries, all over Europe. Chabadnikim will go. It's not only Russia. Russia belongs to Chabad. Chabad began in Russia. Chabad is white Russian in its origins. The Rebbe, the seventh Rebbe, spoke a Yiddish that any Litvak could understand. There was no difference basically between the Rebbe's Yiddish and the Litvische Yiddish I grew up with in the yeshiva world. Chabad will go to every nook and corner. Now, here's where conflict begins. Many times Chabad comes in first, there will be no conflict. Times Chabad will come in after there's some sort of established community. Naturally, there'll be conflict. Morty was in a kehila where there was no conflict. Chabad came in, revitalized the shul. But when, what was it, the neighborhood changed, they were going to sell the shul?
No, that's reparations.
Reparations from Germany, you mean?
Or from the big government. It was in...
You're talking about from World War II.
Yeah.
Well, when reparations appeared on the scene with heavy money, we're talking about Vilna, suddenly the old timers didn't want the Chabadnikim to get the money. They came back and they wanted the shul. You're going to have machloket, but there's a very more basic machloket, which I want to end off the class with, and I'll deal with it next week, halacha lema'aseh. And this machloket you just saw in the classroom here. You saw it last week. Alex and the Rebbe, Alex and the Rebbe, different thinking. To my way of thinking, every Jew should come in Aliyah. Every Jew. Ba'asher hu sham. Alex is thinking, we have to build Jewish communities all over the world. Jews are living there. They're not going to necessarily go on Aliyah. Lehefer, we need them there. Alex got upset with yours truly because anyone sitting in my classes, if they'll ask me, Rebbe, what should I do? I'll tell them, stay in Israel, find your way here. Alex says, no. We need Rabbanim in America. We need Rabbanim in England. We need Rabbanim in Manchester. We need Rabbanim all over Europe. If they stay in Israel, Jews will suffer. The Rebbe has a big supporter, his wife. Your grandmother is still angry at me for encouraging students from here, if they're going back to America, to go into the rabbinate. What are you doing to nice Jewish young men, bringing them as sheep to the slaughter? So I have my wife behind me. Alex has two Gedolei Yisrael behind him, the Lubavitcher Rebbe and Moriah Rebbe Rav Soloveitchik. And this, I can tell you, in the 60s, there was a tremendous hit-over-root after the Six-State War. I'm not the only one who wanted a common aliyah. In my case, my wife didn't give me any choice, and we're here. But there were many others. I'll take a case study. Label Green was rabbi in a suburb of Toronto. Very, very successful. I hope he's alive. I don't know. Label Green. I hope I'm recalling his first name properly. A fabulous guy. He was chavruta with a guy named Isaacs, who later winds up in Bangor, Maine. He lives in Israel today after he retired. And Rabbi Green went to Lubavitcher Rebbe, and the Rebbe told him absolutely not to go in Aliyah. You're successful. You know the mentality. You know the language. You know your kehila. You're not allowed to leave them. I know others who went to the Rebbe and got the same answer. I heard with the Rav. People went, the Rav gave exactly the Lubavitcher Rebbe's answer. Rakefet, the Rothkopf at that time, was smart. He was a smart aleck. Why? He didn't ask. He wrote a letter to the Rav. Dear Rebbe, I'm going in Aliyah, and I'm meeting you. I'm coming to your apartment Wednesday when I finish my shir in the yeshiva, 1 o'clock. Is this okay with the Rav? And I will take a birchat preda. I didn't come to ask him. He asked me, remember his question, how will you make a living? The Rav's feet were totally on the ground. Baruch Hashem, 47 years later, I still don't have a definitive answer. How will you make a living? But thank God, Ashreinu, Ashreini, Baruch Hashem, and Kanaim Hara, and Ani Modela Kadosh Baruch Hu, all the blessings he blessed me with, Alat Mat HaKodesh. I bow my head very humbly. No kina, no taiva, and no covet. But lirot banim uvenei banim, oskim v'torah v'mitzvah. There's nothing greater, nothing more important in the world. So this is a legitimate question. And how does this play out? Now, I have to tell you, I'm going to play it out next week and show you what's happening. It's mamish happening right now. That's what's amazing. It's real. It's tangible. I have to tell you, my own feeling, and no one will deny the fact that I'm the biggest Zionist sitting in this room, with all the respects to all the wonderful students in front of me. But I told you, this was a tremendous debate in the Mossad. Whenever we had a free moment, I remember I was in the secret offices once a week, once 10 days. A lot of decisions had to be made from 1980 through 1989, 1990. And in a free moment, we would debate the issue, if a Russian gets out, does he have any right to go to the United States, Canada, Britain, wherever, and up to Israel? And I remember I.A. Kroll's later, Tzadik LaBracha, would shout at me, we're not risking our lives for them to go from one gullus to another gullus. Okay, it's a legitimate debate. My own feeling is we have to be very realistic. Not everyone will come in Aliyah at once. It's a process. But one thing I know, the more Jewish communities we have, the more Jewish identity, ultimately, the bigger the Aliyah, the finer the Aliyah. And that's my own feeling. Many people will argue with me. Why are we wasting time building Kehillot in Russia? You're not going to get all the Jews out of once. But if there's a vivacious, dynamic Jewish community, Aliyah ultimately benefits. Because you can't be a good Jew without Pashat Lech Lecha. And ultimately, you visit Israel, you open your mind. Many a Chabadnik went to the Rebbe, we want to go in Aliyah. And the Rebbe, because of his tremendous wisdom, encouraged them. This is part of being a Rebbe. I told you months ago, years ago, how I went to a very famous Rebbe today. You know, I mentioned his name. And I said to him, and he's a youngster. I was at his parents' engagement party. And I said to him, how the heck can you be a Rebbe and give people advice and tell them what to do? Who are you? What are you? The Rebbeinu Shalom. Even the Rebbeinu Shalom doesn't do that. He gives you freedom of choice. Ubachata b'chayim, right or wrong. Look at the Rambam, Hilchat Tshuva. So he gave me a fabulous, he said, look, I don't tell people what to do. My role as the Rebbe is to see what they want to do. I have to interpret their minds. He's like a psychologist. Then I encourage them. And when the Rebbe encourages them, they will be matzliach. Because then they feel the Rebbe's behind me. That's the answer. But I have to tell you, I agree with Alex. Build communities all over the world. More communities, the more Jews you attract. They come out of the woodworks. And the more you have. What is my famous word? People quote me on it. People complain America doesn't have an aliyah. I said America has the finest aliyah of all. The Trumat Maishrat of the United States. Go to America. And I end off in this very room. Two students came over to me a few years ago, 5-6 years ago already, and gave me Musa, Rebbe, why did you leave America? You would have had such hashpah in America. You're what we're looking for. And they're complaining about the Rebbe. I know what they're talking about. I told them, you guys are so stupid. Had I remained in America, I'd be like everyone else. You understand? Like I would have gone along with the trends. The greatness was, Baruch Hashem, I got out of America in 69, and here my students, Marin Tainet, Dafsayin, Named Aleph, my students challenged me. And out of that challenge, we've tried our best to provide guidance and Torah Hashem Tamima. So to reiterate, on this Monday morning when I thought, oh, I'm very happy, I really thought that when Rabbi Miller told me this morning, he says, yes, bad news for me. I thought he meant that the shiur ends at the 10:10. You follow me? He said, I figure we go down. I don't know what's going to go on. If you have to put on gas masks, what? We've been through it. We've been through it already. Kanayin Hara, we've been through it. So on this Monday morning, when there's not such good news here, and with the bus that crashed yesterday, Hashem Yerachem, what it means to be a bus driver, and so much death, Hasidic Yunga light among them. You saw already, it's a bus going from Jerusalem to Bnei Brak. They're not carrying Obama's people on that bus. That much I can tell you. These are ones that are mentioned. This is Yerushalayim. This is Shtissel. These are the people from Shtissel that you saw on the bus, that you see on the TV series. So, and that's one tragedy, and that they opened fire with automatic weapons at Shah Shem. This is not a small matter. It's unbelievable how many automatic weapons they have. Open fire, right? Meshamayim Zikunu, that we blew them away before they could harm any soldiers. But it doesn't end, it doesn't end. And on a lighter note, could you imagine the Prime Minister, former Prime Minister of the State of Israel, as we speak, has been welcomed into Kela Masiyahu. Where is Kela Masiyahu?
Ramla Lud.
So that's where Aryeh Deri was?
Yes.
That's where they set up the yeshiva. I went to visit the yeshiva outside. Okay. That's what I thought. But I know it's Lud. Ramla Lud. Okay, it's right there. Kanayinai, what a world. But Torah is pure, and we have to get rid of the kinetivin covered and Torah Hashem Tamima. So what did we do today? We had honored guests. The Haber family, I didn't know. I see Haber, they're asking. I told Shea to give you directions, but I know the family. We met them. Oh, what a wonderful, wonderful family. Kanayin Hara, you should only have Nachat and Maslin and regards to all the women in the family. I was very impressed. Your wife, your sister-in-law, she was really something, I recall. So what did we do today? We dealt with the problems of thinking my way or the highway. And this is a real, real problem today. And it's not just Chabad. We'll come back to it next week. It exploded in Lakewood. But no one has it as big as Chabad, because Chabad is all over the world. So when you're all over the world, there's bound to be tension and interaction. And particularly where there's an established community and Chabad comes in, so you can understand you have the ingredients here for a cantankerous situation. Be'ezrat Hashem, on Sunday, we pick up with Reb Moshe and the weddings and the mechitza. But then we go into the mechitza in shuls, and that you'll see what Rabbanim went through in the 60s, you don't have these problems today, but the problems we had then, and it reflects in Reb Menashe Klein. The freebies are piling up. Rabbi Rubin, I want you to know I have material for you. You're not here to claim it. Ar v'chiyut, it should be, correct? This is Chabad, very sophisticated. But one second, this is on Rabbi Dessler too. Do you read modern Hebrew? This is on that he too.
He learned with Itchid Matmid.
But correct. He learned with Itchid Matmid, and he was big in Tanya and Likutei Torah. Very fascinating volume. Here's Rabbi Riskin's statement on Rabbi Lau, Chief Rabbi Lau. I don't agree, but we're all entitled to our opinion. 100 letters found in home, and very, very moving article about Moshe Tuvia Fisher, who was a Talmud of Rav Moshe Tzvi Neria in Kfar HaRoeh, and how the Rebbe loved him and corresponded with him. Very, very unique. But he never told him, give up being a religious Zionist. This is about my student David Goldis that just appeared in Yateid Ne'eman in English, February 12th. David is involved with financing the Orlando Yeshiva. It's an interesting article filled with Hashgacha Pratit. This is what we discussed yesterday. This is for you, Alex, that the Rebbe did approve a different levels of training in the Yeshiva high schools. Pictures of Adenstein Zoltz davening at the Ohel. Okay, Rav Stein Zoltz, who is the only one in his biography with so many biographies of the Rebbe, he says that the Rebbe had Ruach HaKodesh. That is a real chassid. Miller doesn't say it, Talushkin doesn't say it, but Rav Aden says it. Wow. We all know him, I trust. This is about, believe it or not, again, we live in two worlds, what I've spoken about so many times. In Utah at the Canyons, they have opened a kosher restaurant for all the Jews that need kosher food there. And the problems of getting supplies all the way in Utah. In the only way to purchase wine in Mormon majority Utah is via state liquor stores. They ordered a fortune of wine and liquor, and nothing has come through yet. When it's not a private enterprise where it's public, you follow state liquor stores. Min abishnis tzishfer. Translation. Nu, can anyone help me? It's like in Russia. The Beryuska used to close 20-1 instead of 1. When it's not your store, you don't give a hoot. This is what I mentioned yesterday. It's very important if you haven't read it. It's Sharansky's granddaughter, Sharansky's daughter, writing a thank you to the Jewish people for saving her grandfather. This son, her father, right, I'm confused, age-wise, he should have grandchildren, but he was in, you know where he was. This is a riot, how we live in two worlds. This is Lakewood, Ir HaKodesh, Super Sunday, that's the big day for the big football games. Big sale, super special, to feed 10 people, 20 people, 60 people, Deli West, while you're watching the football game, Mines via Chazarjin Tug, no translation. Remembering super sages as human beings. It's a sociological study on the concept of Das Torah, something we've spoken about. And it's a research paper by Yochai Chakak, and maybe a master's thesis. Fascinating. He quotes Rav Huttner, the usual sources, Pachad Yitzchak. This is for the two gentlemen who have PhDs in science, Chaim Selig Slomanansky. I spoke about him. You read about a Jew who knew Shasim Paiskin and might have invented more inventions than Thomas Edison. And when the Russians quote that they invented certain things before America, they may be right. Pass this back to Charlie and Morty can share. An interview with the Rebbe, an interview with a Talmud who went to the Rebbe, who a big Mizrachiite, and the wonderful advice the Rebbe gave him. This is fabulous. Mendel Lipska, with the Rebbe when he was a little kid, the deal the Rebbe makes with him. If you want to see the Steinout Foundation for Jewish Life, so much money is being poured into trying to create Judaism. Kids should remain Jewish, and Steinhardt deserves a lot of credit. He's part of the Taglit, part of what they call that in English, birthright. This is their publication. I quoted in an article that the Jewish Action just received. I just got a message from them. They don't know if it'll be, it'll probably be in the summer issue, not the next issue. It's, I quote from here in a piece on Meir Kahana. It's very fascinating. Read this. Look at it. Get a feel what's going on. On one hand, you have to say Shechiyani, and then you have to rip Kriya. It's both at once. This is about the Gottesman family and what Mr. Gottesman did, giving endless money to the yeshiva, Mendel Gottesman. And if you recall, a number of weeks ago, his great-grandson visited, or grandson visited this class, and his great-grandson is studying at Machon Lev. This is very fascinating. It's incorporations of the shul in the South Bronx in the late 30s, and the secretary of the shul is Aaron Mustel. Do you know who Aaron Mustel is? That's the brother of Zero Mustel. And I taught Aaron Mustel's grandchildren, both women and men, Shomrei Torah and Mitzvah. And Zero Mustel, a guy, you don't even know the guy was once Jewish. He's their great uncle. The Rebbe and the Rav, the story of Rabbi Kowalski and the Rav. Rabbi Yeshua Gordon, Olav HaShalom, who we spoke about, very fascinating. A beautiful picture of a great Chabad Hasidu, Reb Mendel Fotifus, and that's his cousin, Reb Yaakov Kamenetsky. Could you imagine? I never knew that. There he is with his cousin. Anyone, Jay, this is for you if you haven't seen it, an article on contradictions in Rabbi Soloveitchik's theological writings. Have you seen it? Pass that to Jay. Okay, this is for next week, Be'ezrat Hashem. All right, and we've given out everything. This I have to take care of. My dear students, sorry for keeping you so late, but blame it on the mitzvah shel hatzava to remind us where we are. Until we meet again in health and happiness, das v'dayah.
Okay. Yeah.